time to get underway with Radio Friendships. Stay tuned as your hosts, Don and Sandra Tipton, share exciting news about what God is doing throughout the world in this missions-minded radio broadcast.
Trust. It's easy to trust when things are good. But when trials and challenges come our way, where do we turn? Too often we look to other people for answers, when the whole time God waits patiently for us to give Him a chance to show Himself to us and those around us. Welcome to Radio Friendships. Today we are going to listen to a chapter of the book, Jesus and Company. It is a story of faith and trust in the lives of Don and Sandra Tipton, the founders of Friendships Unlimited. Their story is not unlike your own personal story of trust. The circumstances may be different, but it is the same issue of trust we all face in our walk with Christ. At the end of the program, we will give information on how you may obtain a copy of the book. But for now, relax and enjoy a chapter called A Tug in the Right Direction.
I had been thinking over our eventual need for huge amounts of cargo and had it on my mind to acquire a tugboat. Whether it was the Lord inspiring me or my own simple thoughts, I'm not sure. My plan was to run a barge and tug up the Sacramento River. We could make friends with the local farmers and load the barge with every good thing they had surplus. Maybe we could even bring it out into the harbor and transfer the cargo to our ships. This seemed like smart thinking to me. This must be what the Lord has in mind. I checked our bank account to make absolutely sure it was as empty as it usually was. It was. I then started to work toward acquiring a tug, even going so far as to attend tugboat auctions. But I soon found out that tugboat owners are very proud of their boats, and they want a lot of money for them. They didn't take too kindly to the suggestion of giving them away. Then I heard through the grapevine about a tugboat, a big one. It was about 140 feet of sheer power, one of the larger tugs on the Pacific coast, and was currently moored on the Petaluma River. According to the description, the tug had four stories above the water and one below, and all the winches and power we would ever need. It was a bargain, a fire sale. The owner was only asking $500,000. This seemed like a proper tugboat for us, so we made an appointment with the owner, a man named Don Hughes. Hughes was large, with bright red hair and a nautical-type beard, ruggedly handsome, like one of the old seamen they paint in pictures. His voice sounded like soft thunder, and he had even once owned a bar on the San Francisco waterfront. Jamie and I made our way to Northern California, where Mr. Hughes was kind enough to pick us up from the airport. He drove us to a ranch in Petaluma, where the tug was moored along the banks of the Petaluma River. Parking his big Mercedes in the mud, Mr. Hughes got out and led us, sloshing through the mire, over the top of the levee bank toward the river. There she sat, this marvelous old tug, tied to a giant oak tree. Mr. Hughes toured us all through the beautiful vessel, giving a four-hour presentation, leaving nothing out. Now we were together in the galley. "Would you care to see anything else?" he asked in his deep, strong voice. "No, I think you've adequately shown me everything I need to see," I replied. Looking down at me, his broad shoulders came square to mine. The time for the deal had come. "You've seen my boat. How do you like her?" "Oh, I like her. She's certainly a fine boat. Everything you say she is." "You've heard the price. How do you like that?" "Oh, I think it's a fine price at $500,000. Below market, I'm sure, for such a dignified ship." "Well, I guess you'll take her then." "Yes, sir, I certainly want to take her." "Good, then it's done," he said with a slight smile. "But there's one small problem," I said. "I don't have a dime."
"What?"
he boomed out as he leaned over and stared deep into my eyes. There was silence. We stared at each other for a long time. No one blinked. I then said, "Mr. Hughes, God has need of your tugboat." There was another deep stare. Mr. Hughes' thundering voice softened as he replied, "Well, sonny,
If God has need of my tugboat, I wouldn't be caught dead with it. And he meant that literally. He proved to be a man of his word by turning over the title papers to the tug, free and clear. There we were, the proud new owners of a tugboat, papers in hand, not a dime against her. To celebrate, we decided to go to town and buy some bread, bologna, and juice, come back and have lunch aboard the tug. "Isn't it strange," I said to Jamie, "here's this giant tugboat tied to a tree on the bank of the Petaluma with no other boats around." When we came back a little later to the tugboat, a gentleman farmer named Neil Smith was waiting for us. Smith was the man who owned the tree that the tugboat was tied off to, along with hundreds of acres of one of the most beautiful farms in Petaluma, complete with a giant old farmhouse. He was a likable man who seemed kind and caring, a handsome, educated, Ivy League type with an esoteric way of thinking while maintaining an upper crust posture. It was a charming combination, and we hit it off from the start. "You're the new owner?" he asked. "I was wondering how soon you'll be moving the tug." "I guess I'll move it downtown," I said, "as soon as I can arrange for a free dock." He smiled and said, "It came here from downtown. You wouldn't think so, but there's a shortage of pier space for a ship your size, tugboats and barges and such." "Oh," I said, "I wasn't aware of a shortage of dock space." "Yes, you see, 9 other tugboats have applied for your same tree. Please, Mr. Smith, would you join us for some bologna sandwiches in the galley and we can discuss my dilemma?" Mr. Smith explained to us that he was an architect from San Francisco and had established a firm that built many of San Francisco's recognizable structures. One day, he said, he took a look at the structures he had created and decided to take up farming. Tired of being part of the whole overdevelopment problem, he decided instead, he said, to be part of the answer. Now he owned and operated this big, beautiful farm, a place where fat old cows wandered wherever they wanted. Jamie and I were immediately impressed with him. Smith asked us to explain about the mission we were on, so I told him what we wanted to do with this old tugboat and our ship in Seattle. He said, "I'll go to Seattle with you and take a look at all this." And he did. Neil flew up to Seattle and spent several days with us aboard Spirit. We became fast friends. He decided that the tugboat would be his guest, no charge. All was free. Our new good friend, Mr. Smith, was dying of cancer at this time, but neither of us knew it. He has since died. Now he himself is being hosted forever beside a riverside by our Father in heaven. I'm sure he and Jesus have had talks about the good old tugboat that was tied off to a tree. Later, as a reminder of the reverence we felt toward God at giving us this magnificent tugboat, we decided to call her just that. Reverence. Finances were at an all-time low. We had 3 ships and many crew members to support. What small funds we had were stretched thin, so we were praying for a way to meet our obligations. Then an interesting thing happened. The Yardarm Knot, a sister ship to the Spirit, arrived at the pier next to us. She was badly in need of a paint job. We had just completed painting the hull on Spirit. It had taken the crew a month of steady work to complete the job. The paint had been donated. We had received 6,000 gallons, which was much more than we would need for the next couple of years. The owners of the Yardarm offered to pay us $6,500 to paint their vessel if we would use some of our donated paint. This offer sounded good since we had a $1,300 dockage bill to pay on gratitude. However, up to this point, we hadn't worked for money to fund the ministry and we weren't sure how the crew would react. Still, we needed money, but we had no solicitation of funds and no way to raise them. We had prayed for a provision and felt it was important not to overlook this opportunity. After we thought it over, we decided that we couldn't put Jesus in a box. Just because we hadn't done work for money before was no reason to dismiss this provision. We asked the crew for their participation. When I told them of the opportunity, some yelled, "No!" Many frowned. I recognized that I'd run into a religious bone of contention. I asked, "Can we have a show of hands for those who will join in painting?" The hands shot up, and most were more than willing to help. Some still maintained that we were selling out. They hadn't come to work outside this ministry, they said. But most of us agreed that for this particular time the opportunity presented itself, and if we used the money to pay the bills for the ship, we were still working for God. The ship we were to paint was tied up on the front of the pier facing Puget Sound. Our men were so energetic that they began to paint the yardarm in record time. Amazingly, what had taken us a month to do on the Spirit, we were completing now in only 48 hours. The ship looked beautiful. The two vessels looked like twins sitting side by side. The crew of the yardarm leaned over their rail watching our guys work. The Spirit crew talked with them, inviting several to our Sunday morning church service. But the men seemed disinterested or noncommittal about attending. Wedged between the dock and the yardarm knot were two giant rubber tires that kept the huge ship from scraping up against the dock. The breeze was on the outside, pushing the ship tightly against the pier. One of the men from the yardarm hollered down to one of our men, "I'd like to see how you're going to paint behind those tires, my friend." "Don't worry. By the time we get there, God will do something," our man said. The yardarm crew shook their heads and chuckled, convinced they were talking to some religious nuts. "If God does something when you get to that tire, I'll be at your church on Sunday," one said. The ferry boats that run the Puget Sound from island to shore are large and sail very fast. The regularly running ferry boats pass by every few hours. Later that day, a tug pulling a loaded barge came into Puget Sound and approached the Seattle waterfront. The ferry had to divert around the tug and barge. It was delayed because of this. Trying to make up time, it raced down the waterfront closer than we've ever seen a ferry boat come before. As he powered by us, the ferry created a large wave that rocked both ships. They pulled back against their ropes and rocked back to the docks. Amazingly, this wave action flipped both tires up beside the yardarm where they stayed, lodged lengthwise between the boat and the dock, exposing the area that needed to be painted. The crew of both ships witnessed this unusual event. Our crew couldn't believe it any more than the men from the yardarm could. Never before had this happened in the years we'd been there at these docks, and never did we see it happen again. But this one special time, at just the right moment, God had played a trick on our new friends. We worked quickly to paint the right places. As the next ferry boat came in, going in the opposite direction and doing the same fast diversion, the ship pulled back from the dock, stretched the lines out, and our men shoved the tires back into place against the hull. As the boat pushed back to the dock and cushioned itself against the tires, our crew glanced up at the yardarm men. "That's how it's done," they said. We had a great laugh about the incident, and Sunday morning, several of the crew members of the yardarm came to the church service, keeping their end of the bargain. What a story we had to tell! When we received the $6,500 payment, Jamie felt the Lord wanted us to offer each crew member $50. As we called everyone together to distribute the pay, it is interesting to note that not one man or woman, even those who felt it was wrong to take the job, felt it was wrong to take the money. We paid our bills, the money ran out, and once again, we had no funds to pay the new obligations. There were no more ships to paint, and Gratitude was running up bills fast as she prepared to sail. We were offered a job to re-roof a house, tile the bathroom and kitchen, replace the carpet, repaint, and clean up for $2,500. This time there were no religious disputes about it. All were in agreement, happy to do the work, and we finished the job quickly. Never again has the Lord asked us to work outside of our operation. I'm still not certain why He did then, but it's all okay with me.
Friendships would like to invite you to participate in a new program that we're beginning this fall. If you're a recent high school graduate, or you know a recent high school graduate who would be interested, we'd like to offer this invitation to you. Here's Sondra Tipton, our president, who's going to explain more to you about it.
Friendships is starting a new program, Relief Apprenticeship Missions Program. We call it RAMP, and we invite people graduating from high school to come and spend a year with us here at Friendships, exploring God's will in your life and learning all about relief missions. If you're interested, please call us at 337-433-5022, or better yet, go to the website at friendships.org, where you can get a lot of background information about the organization and download your application.
One day in the late spring, Sandra was speaking on the phone with a minister from Nigeria who asked why we weren't ready to run missions with the Spirit Ship. She told him that, among other things, we still needed hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of engine parts. The minister finished his conversation with Sandra and handed the phone to another party, then, a few minutes later, asked to speak to her again. He said that the Lord had just told him that we would have all the engine parts we needed within 4 weeks. She thanked him, but didn't take his word of encouragement too seriously, because over the past few years we had heard many supposedly prophetic words that had not come true. However, this time would prove to be different. A couple of days later, after some appointments on shore, Sandra returned to the ship. Walking through the passageways and into the galley, she felt an unexplainable excitement in the air. It was as if something had happened, something good. When she reached the mess hall, she found me and said, "I feel like something has happened. I can feel it in the air." With a huge smile, I blurted out, "Something certainly has." I began to tell her that during that morning, while she was gone, to my great surprise, a man walked on board, a man whose name I'd heard, but who I didn't know. The man was John Hoff. John was about my age, but tall and slim, and had the kindest eyes I'd ever seen. We sat down over a cup of coffee in the mess hall, and he opened with, "I'm part owner of the Rose Knot, an exact sister ship to this one. It was a spy ship used by the government to track the Gemini capsule in the NASA space program. Rose Knot is fully equipped with every part imaginable, and then some. For business reasons of our own, my partner and I are selling the ship. I know you're missing a lot of parts from your wheelhouse all the way to the engine room, and I'm aware of how hard these parts are to come by. The parts you need will make no difference to us or the buyer. The ship is a treasure house for you, but the problem is we're closing the deal very soon, so you only have 4 weeks to get the parts off Rose Knot." Sadly, I said, "I'm sorry. As bad as we need these parts, we have no money. I know you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of parts, but we have less than $100 in our safe." John replied, "Oh, no, you don't understand. We want to give them to you, but you'll have to come and get them right away." The next morning, the crew and I drove to the Rose Knot in Tacoma. We knew the ship was anchored about a mile or so out and had no power, so we brought a 12-foot aluminum skiff, some lamps, candles and flashlights, and all the tools we could find. What parts weren't loose, we would unbolt. John Hoff looked at the 18 of us standing there with our skiff, blankets and pillows, food and sandwich coolers, jars of water and jugs of milk. He fought back a laugh and said, "What are you going to do with that little bitty aluminum skiff with no motor?" "This is all we have that floats," I replied. John shook his head and said, "Don't go anywhere. I'll be back." A few minutes later, we heard the roar of a loud engine and saw the stack on a big tugboat blowing black. John tooted the horn and poked his head out from the bridge, waving us over. We ran down the beach toward the tug with everything we could carry, tripping over our gear, excited to have a ride out on a big, safe tugboat. We pulled up beside the Rose Knot on John's tug, climbed aboard, and shifted all our gear to the deck. Grabbing our candles and flashlights, we entered into the bowels of this giant ship. We must have seemed like kids in a candy store. It was a vast treasure house, dark and cold like King Tut's tomb, but laden with every good thing that it would take to put Spirit to sea for years to come. To our amazement, we saw a huge cache of parts with our vessel's name and labels on them. Our missing parts were found. John explained that some years ago the previous owner of the Spirit had sold the parts to the previous owners of the Rose Knot. It was a double blessing, Rose Knot's equipment and Spirit's, ours for the taking. Before us was a veritable fortune in spare parts. With a lit candle in one hand and a wrench in the other, we began to dismantle the things we needed. John stood back and watched, then wandered through the dark ship, shaking his head. This will never do. John took a fuel hose and threw it over the side of the ship, down onto the decks of his tugboat. He then stuck the hose deep into his own fuel tanks, connected the other end to the giant locomotive generators aboard the Rose Knot, opened the ship's valves, and started the motors. All of a sudden, the engines roared and the ship lit up like a Christmas tree. We extinguished our candles. Now we could use both hands to work, and boy, did we make use of them. With us during that special time was my beloved friend Cecil Sinclair, who had come to be like my own father. Cecil, a mostly American Indian, and he looked the part, had met and joined us in the early days of Spirit, and had stood by me in every hard time. It's a boy's childhood dream to have someone who watches your backside, a kind of rear guard looking out for your best interests. Well, Cecil was mine, and was, until, as this book went to press, God called him home. Here was every piece of equipment we had been praying for, including diesel injectors for our big main engine. Now he sat straddled atop the engine saying, "Nobody touch these injectors. These are mine." He then began to gather them up, take them ashore, and load these big, heavy parts into the trunk of his Ford LTD, promptly breaking the rear springs of the car. But Cecil didn't care. He knew these parts were a miracle from God, and he was determined to drive them to the Spirit himself. Next, we took out 2-ton main engine pistons and heavy sleeve liners, dragging them down the hallways to a place they could be lifted off the ship. John Hough continued to shake his head. "If you try to put that 2,000-pound piston in your 12-foot skiff, they'll both be at the bottom of the sea." "We don't know what we'll do, but we'll think of something. God must have an answer," we replied. John pumped some fuel into a tank so we could continue to operate, then sailed off in his tugboat. A few hours later, he and the tug came back, only this time he was pushing a great big barge with a crane in the middle. He began to operate the crane, taking everything we gathered and placing it into his barge. Over the next couple of weeks, our men worked marathon hours, and each day, John Hough made trips with his barge from the ship to the shore, loaded with parts. He borrowed trucks from a friend and helped us run loads to the Spirit. Soon the dock alongside Spirit and her main deck were piled high with every sort of spare part and piece of equipment we could imagine, so much so you could hardly walk on the deck or the dock, and still the truckloads continued to arrive. We brought home over $1 million worth of parts and equipment from the Rose Knot that month, including most of the wheelhouse gear, engine room parts, and needed spares. Amazingly, we were finished and out in 4 weeks, just as the Nigerian minister had prophesied. Another coincidence, eh? Don't you believe it?
Ah, yes. The meaning of the word coincidence evaporates as we take the hand of our loving Father. It is there that we learn to lean not on our own understanding, but to trust the Lord with all our heart. Well, that's all we have time for today. If you would like to learn more about how to obtain a copy of the book, Jesus and Company, you can call us at 337-433-5022. That number once again, 337-433-5022. Or visit us on the website at friendships.org. Or come in and see us at 1019 North First Avenue. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Join us again next time with Don and Sandra Tipton on Friendships Radio.
Thank you for listening to the Friendships broadcast today. Don and Sandra Tipton invite you to join them again next time as we stand in awe of the great God we serve. Friendships is based at Port Mercy in Lake Charles, Louisiana. For information about Friendships Unlimited, dial 337-433-5022 or go on the internet to friendships.org.